right, this is Pure Decking Show number 452 for Thursday, October the 7th, 1913. This is a show about stuff that interests me, like information security, rigging the game, and acknowledging the fact that I need to rewatch Hackers to try to remember when computers were fun. Tonight, I'm just drinking the regular drinking bourbon. Madman, what's up?
Nothing much. Drinking Leinenkugels and then reading Why I Hate Hollywood. Just because it didn't need to be made, and All Females Expendables is going to be coming out.
Are they at least?
I can see the headlines now. The movie tanks due to white supremacy.
No. You get the Swedish bikini team or the modern equivalent. Give them all, give them all machine guns and film it in Baywatch vision. You know, slow mo. you'll make millions.
There were only two good female action heroes. And one of them was Sigourney Weaver. The reason I'm saying two is I'm certain if I looked hard enough, I could find a second one.
Linda Hamilton.
And Sigourney Weaver's too old for that.
The chick who played Sarah Connor. She was good in
the original Sarah Connor, yeah.
Yeah.
She would work too. And not with
the chick from Resident Evil.
Shit they did to her in the newest movie. The original Sarah Connor.
Well, I mean, the actor
was an action hero.
The actor or actress can only do so much with a shit script, right?
Yeah.
So.
And the chick that played the Resident Evil, all those movies, Costco.
Angelina Jolie had a couple of decent ones too. She could be in there. Problem is, we're all thinking of actresses that are probably a little bit long in the tooth to be doing that movie nowadays.
Well, we're showing our age, see?
Oh, God, we're old. Yeah.
Just because my last birthday cake had the department called on it doesn't mean I'm old.
It's like, what'd you do? I used all the candles off the birthday cake to roast some hot dogs for her. And it's like, why put all that fire to waste? Oh, yeah, let's finish the intro. Aryu is here.
Well, I am drinking water. Once again, one day I will have an alcoholic drink on this show.
Yeah, I should be drinking more water. Anyways, the bullshit of Hollywood. I think the problem is Hollywood has gotten so corporate and so formulaic that any attempt to break out of it just doesn't get funded. So those movies, if they get made, they're like super indie and, usually just end up on YouTube instead of it's like a movie,
And some of them are hard to find. Like Bad to Cross Concrete was a good, fairly recent Hollywood movie. I didn't know it existed until it was on DVD, and it had a theatrical release.
Yeah, some of they don't want to give any heads up. Like there's a movie out at the moment. I'm just waiting for a HD version of it called Old Henry. That looks amazing.
Or Old Yeller. That would probably make me cry.
Well, if you get the Old Greg joke, then I'm sorry. If you don't get the joke, Google Old Greg videos, and then I'm sorry. So, actually, today, by today's standards, that shit's probably tame. So, anyways, I guess we'll get into it. The story I thought would be worth leading with is probably not the story that I should be leading with, but it's the first one in the list because I didn't reorder this shit from earlier because it's been kind of a shit day. So this is from Just Security. China released its 14th five-year plan for economic development last month, including its intended next steps in technology. The blueprint makes clear that even before the ink is dry on many 5G contracts for broadband telecommunications, China and its networking giant Huawei are gearing up to ensure their vision of the internet goes global. Excuse me. But Huawei's plans for 6G and beyond make U.S. concerns over 5G look paltry. Huawei is proposing a fundamental internet redesign, which it calls new IP, sort of like new speak, right?
Designed, or new Coke. None of that turned out well.
Designed to build, quote, intrinsic security, unquote, into the web. Now, I'm going to clarify, When the Chinese government says intrinsic security, they do not mean the same thing that I mean when I talk about security. I'm just going to point this out in case it's not bloody obvious. Intrinsic security means that individuals must register to use the internet, and authorities can shut off an individual's user or individual user's internet access at any time. In short, Huawei is looking to integrate China's social credit surveillance and censorship regime into the internet's architecture. The new IP proposal itself rests on a flawed technical foundation that threatens to fragment the internet into a mess of less interoperable, less stable, and less secure networks. To avoid scrutiny of new IP shortcomings, Huawei has circumvented international standards bodies where experts might, you know, challenge the technical shortcomings of the proposal. Instead, Huawei has worked through the United Nations International Telecommunications Union, where Beijing holds more political sway. The appropriate place for review of the new IP concept would be the Internet Engineering Task Force. The IETF and other standards bodies are examining most of the technical changes to internet infrastructure to make up the new IP proposal, and these bodies have said it is premature to make drastic change without more information and consensus. Huawei's plan to rebuild the internet from the top down based on speculative use cases, use of the internet that might one day exist as opposed to an established use case that current users or businesses are already clamoring for, bucks the logic of internet governance, which postulates that changes should be incremental and based on established needs. By the way, for anybody who doesn't know what new IP is, they're talking about replacing TCP/IP, you know, the base layer protocol of the internet. They want to replace that with at that layer with this new IP, which has all this other shit shoved in it. So never minding all the other shit they've shoved in it, TCP/IP is a well-established, what, 30-something-some-odd-year-old protocol. Hell, it might be 40 years old now that I think about it, since a lot of it, I mean, certainly elements of it, of the concept of it are that old. That's very well established, very well understood, and at least the protocol itself is fairly bulletproof at this point. Swapping it out for China's give us control of the internet bullshit is not going to end well. Back to the article here. Huawei and the Chinese Communist Party's turn to the UTI is no surprise, even though the UTI's jurisdiction does not actually include internet architecture. When it comes to internet governance, the CCP and other authoritarian regimes have long favored multilateral international institutions like the ITU over multi-stakeholder institutions such as the IETF or the International Cooperation for ICANN. We don't need to read the full name out. It's like S.H.I.E.L.D. in the Marvel's movies. Nobody says the full name. Everybody knows what ICANN is. The multi-stakeholder institutions are governed by a diverse array of representatives from industry, civil society, and government. Multilateral institutions only provide voting power to national governments. In a multi-stakeholder fora, the civil society and industrial representatives tend to favor a free and open internet, which dilutes the influence of national governments, many of whom are likely to favor tightly regulated, censored internet. Authoritarian governments can marginalize private industry and citizens groups by working through multilateral fora such as the ITU, and the ITU will naturally be more receptive to protocols like new IP that grant national governments more control over the internet. In 2019, China and Russia leveraged a similar authoritarian bloc within the UN to pass a censorship-friendly cybercrime resolution. Comparable coalition of like-minded countries could help China push through the new IP proposal, shortcomings and all. Circumventing conventional internet governance institutions in favor of the ITU also sets a precedent for future internet governance-related proposals to go through the ITU instead of the more balanced... Okay, so, you know, then the rest of this talks about, you know, trying to get the government, you know, the United States government to come back in and talk it up. New IP is this entire new layer of access control and network management that they've got proposals on. And if you go look at Huawei's pages on it, they don't really detail anything. It very much reads like a wish list written by government bureaucrats. So, like, if you go look at it here, what is new IP? New IP can be characterized as a technology study initiative driven by a vision on scenarios for utilizing internet technologies in many facets. It doesn't say anything. It doesn't say fucking anything. Okay, here we go. Semantic addressing.
Whatever we want it to be.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, here's the actual proposals. Semantic addressing, catering to an increasing number of services that utilize the data plane of the internet. The data plane of the internet. You could just say that use the internet, because the internet is a fucking data exchange. The data plane of the internet. Fucking kidding me.
To be a plane doesn't have to be a physical thing. That is describing a physical thing. Never mind.
It's probably one of the worst descriptions you could use, because the internet is not flat. Anyways, recognizing existing truths. And if anybody doesn't know what I mean by that, look up what NAT is and you'll understand. It's many layers. The internet has many layers. It's like an onion or an ogre. The internet.
Like an onion or a cake.
Cake might actually be decent enough. I mean, you know, it's not super high number of layers, but there's more layers than one.
I like to think of it as a hypercube.
Oh, dear God. Are we going to get into the hypercube shit about how it predicts all history and time?
Well, no, I just thought if we're going to throw around fucking made-up words, I thought I'd get it in the act.
Nice.
I thought we were going with movie references. He went with Shrek, and I continued it. You were going with Shrek, weren't you?
Unfortunately.
The Onion?
Yeah, it is the first thing. At first the onion was just genuinely trying to think of something with layers, and then I said then an onion, and the first thing that came to my mind after that was an ogre. So it's like, yeah, okay, it's a Shrek reference. Recognizing the existing trends towards improved content delivery through replication and specially deployed CDN systems, as well as from previous initiatives such as information-centric networking, they want to replace DNS with something in the protocol. That's what it is. But if it's in the protocol that they manage, that means that they could control who gets names on the internet. Flexible length addressing, catering to an increasing number of specialized network deployments. The areas of study is driven by the longstanding recognition of IP header overhead, moving instead to variable length address approach that can be efficiently supported alongside the... Oh, for fuck's sake. The internet IP system was a series of bytes. It was selected as a series of bytes. It wasn't an arbitrary... it wasn't arbitrary. That's how it worked. You needed all of the bytes to be filled out to have an address. It was a format. Okay, we're going to eliminate the format for addressing. So now we have to use a fucking regex algorithm at the network layer to figure out if we're talking about content or the address that it's going to. Are you fucking kidding me? Mininets supports, catering to an emerging transport network technologies such as satellite, dynamic networks, and V2X scenarios, and the THZ access, I don't even know what that is, networks in future 6G networks. These networks afford a dynamic, dynamicity of connections that require suitable support from the data plane to form an adequate and high-performing fabric. It's called IPv6, okay? If you want the new version of the internet, it's IPv6. It's not this. Deterministic services that guarantee a low upper bound of end latency jitter and loss rate for specified flows. TCP already has a lot. Okay. They want to build quality of service into it so that they can regulate what's allowed through and what's not. That's what it really means. The problem is reading this and turning the marketing speak and the buzzwords into actual technical specs is nigh on impossible, because I'm trying to read this and be somewhat fair and probably a little cynical at the same time. But this was written by a marketing agency with no clue what they were talking about. Intrinsic security and privacy. Okay, anybody who says something is intrinsically secure, there are two ways for something to be intrinsically secure. Either it's been beaten to death over many years and proven secure, or you don't hook it up to the internet. Because if it's intrinsically secure, that means there's something you haven't thought of at the design level.
I'm thinking nothing is truly secure. It's how secure is it? Because you could break into Fort Knox. It's just how much resources are you willing to pour into that endeavor?
I was thinking a weekend, you know, a case of beer, and whoever I could get in the pickup truck.
A weeb call on the internet would be more effective than that, yes.
But it wouldn't sound
as
funny.
If you throw enough resources at it, you can get into something.
Okay. Let's see what they say for intrinsic security, just to, you know, further my migraine here. To address inherent vulnerabilities of IP networks, including source address spoofing. Okay, with TCP, now with UPX, or yes, okay, there are protocols that allow you to spoof source addresses. But when you're doing a full TCP handshake, you can't spoof the source address, because to do the three-way handshake, you got to get the packets back. IP address spoofing, privacy leak, trust model weakness, and distributed denial of service attacks, which were not considered as one of the original seven design principles, based on Stride security model, a network architecture with intrinsic security and privacy is studied so as to maximally protect user privacy, consolidated distributed trust basis, and build secure and trusted networks. So it's secure because we say it's secure. That's literally what this says, is it's secure because we say it's secure. We've listed out a bunch of vulnerabilities that we're going to solve. We don't know how we're going to solve them because, you know, privacy leak. How do you solve a privacy leak?
Indian contractors, lots of them.
Okay, so when I'm working...
I'm just thinking how upper management would think, that's all.
Well, you're probably right about that. You're probably exactly right about that. But I'm just thinking, okay, how do you solve the privacy leak problem of you've got a bad actor inside of a company pull up the database and takes pictures with their phone so that there is no actual physical connection between the data source and the data distribution point? Tell me, how do you stop that leak?
Armed guards at every terminal.
And confiscating people's
personal...
people
to bring in their own phones.
And that's it. I mean, that's it. You want to say zero leak, so the only things allowed to connect to the internet are verified devices? That's what that's saying. How? How is this going to...
You're going to have whitelist everything on the internet and register it to someone.
Well, I mean, that's...
So my this player knows who I am.
Yeah.
Effectively.
Yeah, and that's what it where it gets... This is why the other article was saying that, oh, they're going to know who each and every user is and can ban them at a moment's notice. Because that's the only way to do this kind of security that they're talking about.
You're driving down the highway. Sorry, your car doesn't work anymore. You had a wrong thought. Traffic
Not
lights.
Just that whole idea of... Once I own something, I can resell it. If it's linked to me, they can just say, well, you may have bought that Roku. You may have owned that Roku, but you're the only one licensed to use that Roku. So once you're done with it, it's now scrap instead of you can sell it at a garage sale and someone else can use the Roku.
And if somebody does use the Roku, they can be arrested on the spot for identity theft.
Learn nothing and you'll like it.
Well, there's that. The other two bullet points here are high throughput and endpoint definable forwarding options, neither of which, again, has any actual description here that makes any sense. It's like, so high throughput just means we're upgrading everything throughout everything to use whatever the fastest we got is, because I've got a whole bunch of networking equipment in the garage that I'm debating about chucking in the trash can that at one point was considered high-throughput enterprise equipment. It's TIM 100 switches. It's left over from the LAN party we tried to start, Madman. I don't know if I have a use for TIM 100 or switches, because a 100 megabit connection is pretty fucking slow these days. It's like Wi-Fi is faster.
Okay. I was going to say, are you going to be using anything that will be it? And if the answer is yes, then ditch it.
I don't think so. I mean, I've got some retro gear. I've got some old laptops and shit I'm going to be playing with for some other projects. But most of that stuff's not even going to get networked. So it's like, I don't know what to do. I mean, maybe keep them for the enclosures? No, that's dumb, too. I've got 3D printers. I guess they're going to go in the trash, even though... I mean, I guess I could build a lab out of them so I could learn old school Cisco networking. But at this point in my life, why?
And the way you solve, I thought we already kind of had a solution for a denial of service attack. It's pretty much the person that's being attacked needs to throw more resources into their network than the guys attacking them. Like, How many other servers can you spin up? How many other locations?
Well, that's sort of like saying when somebody's trying to break down the door, you keep, putting more wood on the other side of the barricade, right? I mean, you eventually run out of supplies, but you're not wrong.
Is that pretty much the way you would fight denial of service attack?
Well, there's a couple of ways to fight a denial of service attack. If your upstream provider is surviving the denial of service attack and your system's not, but you can find some way to identify the packets that are not legitimate, like if somebody's running a low orbit ion cannon, and all of the packets have browser headers of LOIC or Nmap or Python or some other non-web browser thing, okay. Put a firewall in front of your server and have it drop everything that's not legitimate. The problem you run into is with really big denial of service attacks, it's not that your servers can't handle it, it's that the networking infrastructure in front of them can't handle it. That's when you can start getting into real problems, because if my server can filter out the good traffic from the bad and just drop the bad traffic, that's wonderful. That's great. But if my ISP can't handle all the traffic coming at it, it doesn't matter, because I never get to put those filters. The traffic is doing damage before my filter can do anything. Now, I could call up my ISP and say, I'm under a DDoS attack. Here's what's going on. Here's how you filter it out. And maybe that helps. But that's going to be situational, right? So, but there's no way at a protocol level to prevent a DDoS attack unless you can just turn endpoints that are misbehaving off. And that's even still a point of contention in the security industry of, do I have a right to make a configuration change to an endpoint that's causing my server harm? And the general consensus is no. If it's not your device, you don't have a right to change what's on it. All you can do is block the traffic that's coming from it. So, which makes sense, right? You don't want to fuck with somebody else's computer. But, if that computer is causing my network harm, do I have a right to terminate a process or make a configuration change on the other computer? And generally, the answer is no. But obviously, the Chinese government's answer is going to be, hell yes, we can turn it off if it's misbehaving. So,
and if they can turn it off if it's misbehaving, they can also turn it off if it's behaving in a way they don't like.
Well, misbehaving is an ambiguous term.
I'm sharing something that I want, and they don't want me to share.
Yeah.
Well, I was going with a computer that's doing legitimate harm. I can't think of a good reason to not deny it access other than to have that ability. You can arbitrarily choose someone that isn't doing legitimate harm.
Well, there's also the point of, you might think what my computer is doing is legitimate harm, but I don't consider it harm. I consider it, legitimate work. Now, those situations are a little bit more rarefied. That's not when I'm just doing a flat-out, slow Lars DDoS trying to bring your network down. That's fairly blatant and obvious, like running low-orbit ion cannon and shit like that. I use that as an example because it's a well-known one, even though it's several years old now. But if I'm running security testing tools or, Nmap, and I'm trying to map networks, I might think I'm doing legitimate research. I might think I'm doing legitimate documentation work. I might be a hired pen tester trying to see what your network can take. So part of the problem is that this stuff is not well defined. For the longest time, if you did anything in Amazon, you had to get special permission before you could do security testing of any of your services up there, because you're technically testing Amazon, not your own infrastructure. Now, Amazon has since changed some of their contracts, so it's a little bit easier to get shit tested because they're trying to support governments and other people who have actual requirements around annual testing and shit like that. But it gets ambiguous fairly quickly. So if you just have an arbitrary third party that gets to decide what's allowed and what's not, I mean, you're quite correct in that that's rife for abuse. But also you get into these gray areas of where somebody's trying to do what they consider legitimate work, but maybe the people in charge don't understand what they're trying to do or just don't care. And prevent that legitimate work from happening because they don't like it. or they don't understand it, or they think it's bad. Then they've got a, the last one here is endpoint definable forwarding operations. That's just stupid. If my endpoint is if my endpoint is misbehaving, I don't want my endpoint telling my firewall what it's allowed to send in and out. You know, anybody who's done basic network administration knows you don't want the endpoints defining what's allowed as an open port and what's not.
The end user can whitelist everything?
Yep.
Is that what that says?
That's what that says.
I really, really, really need to access Facebook and Netflix from my work terminal because, yes.
Yeah, see, that's dumb. That's what I'm saying is that's dumb. But, so,
but I get to watch little cat GIFs and I don't know, NCIS, the first 3 or 4 seasons before it got crappy.
So we've spent a good 15 minutes here detailing why China's proposal is stupid, right? Now, here's the reason I want to talk about this, besides just the sheer idiocy of what they're asking for, because obviously this was written by bureaucrats. This was not written by anybody with a technical background. They don't understand what they're asking for. They're saying, just make it work, tech people. Just invent a way to make this happen. But obviously that's not what's going to happen. You know, they'll end up with some layer on top of TCP. They won't completely replace TCP/IP. And it'll just get weird. And they'll probably end up breaking the internet off into ones that support their new IP and ones that don't. And you'll end up with two
internets. I like that idea. Yeah, old internet, new internet. You want to be safe? Get on the new internet. You want to be called a fucking faggot? Get on the old internet.
That's probably what it'll be. Of course, they'll be pushing you to upgrade to the new internet, just like they.
Yeah, fuck that, man.
I was
going to
make a vaccine
the
joke,
rest of my
but
life.
It's not the same thing, so it doesn't really work. But. It's like, no, it's like, just upgrade to Teams. I liked IRC. Can't we go back to IRC? No, everyone's on Teams now.
But IRC works better.
What about Slack? You all like Slack? No, Slack's old news. Now everybody's on Teams. For fuck's sake. Don't know about you guys. Not planning on upgrading to Windows 11. Teams is integrated as part of the OS. Because that's what you want.
Bless.
You want
instant
messenger
as
a core part of your operating system.
No, I don't want that.
Now, what if businesses don't want to support two different infrastructures when it comes to their internet?
Well, just go. They'll go where the customers are. We don't have to worry about that.
That's pretty much it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are the customers on the old internet or are the customers on Facebook?
Well, that's what I mean. Maybe we'll see two. They'll never let there be two-tier system because one's freer than the other. They'd never let that happen. It has to be tyranny for all.
No, it'll be redefined as the old internet is the dark net. It's not safe. If you're connected to that, you're
a
terrorist.
Dark net people. Mm-hmm.
I know of businesses that don't have a website. They have a Facebook page.
I know of several of them, actually. Usually they're local small
stuff.
This
could just be that. And then what happens when there's just so many businesses not on the old internet that it may or may not be worth having the old internet? Well, or do you just go with the two machines? This is the one I'm using for the fun old internet. And then I have that lockdown piece of crap that's on the new internet for ordering pizza and stuff off of Amazon.
Well, Madman, you'll see the infrastructure go away. If the old internet is no longer got enough people using it, they'll just quit using it. And, you know, they'll quit bothering to put infrastructure into it and it won't be long before your sysops are going, well, why am I, you know, all the traffic's over here. Why am I wasting my time with this old internet? I can repurpose this infrastructure and put it on new. And that's what they'll do because, you know, it's easier than getting shit funded to replace. But anyways.
It's going to end up being a fight of, it's not something you can just choose to self-segregate. You'll have to actively promote keeping the old internet and pointing out how the new internet is stupid.
Yep. So it'll be a mess is what it's going to be. But the reason I really wanted to talk about this, besides the technical stupidity of it, but bureaucrats being dumb, gee, what a shock. No, the reason I wanted to talk about this was because they're trying to get it pushed through the UN. China is trying to go to the UN telecommunications boards and get this shit pushed through rather than going to the institutions that currently actually, you know, run the internet, ICANN, the engineering groups and the standards bodies. Because if they're able to get a UN mandate saying this is the new protocol for the internet, and I tell you, the reason the UN is interested in this is not because they think China's proposal is the new hotness, although they probably look at it and say it sounds great. The reason they want to do it is because that lets the UN claim ownership of how the internet is run. It takes it from being a technology to being a government standard. Good luck ever fixing anything with it again.
The Klaus. That guy fucking creeps me out.
I mean,
we should stop funding the UN, to be honest.
I mean, seriously.
Fucking yes. Useless. It's useless.
But you see why that scares me, because if the UN is actually able to make an argument that, well, we run the internet now.
Yeah, they're looking for an excuse to exist.
Yeah, I mean,
they're trying to run ICANN.
They wanted to. Yeah. I know Obama was trying to get them involved in running ICANN so that it wasn't just a U.S. venture. I don't remember, though. It's been a bit. Just Google that real quick, right? Let's see.
I'd rant for hours on the UN, but I fucking won't. That's my opinion. We should defund it, disband it.
Let's see. Is a global multi-stakeholder organization created by U.S. government, Department of Commerce. Began in the U.S. government and now continues to be an international community-driven organization independent of any one government. So it's its own thing. So it's headquartered in L.A. Yes, it was started by the U.S. government, but now it's its own multi-stakeholder group. So basically it's a council, and they invite people to it. I wonder, it holds meetings 3 times a year during which the new board members take their seats. How do we define the board? The board is the responsible for exercising blah, 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 blah. ICANN board is internationally represented as set forth by ICANN's bylaws, which maintains at least one director who represents each geographic region. So Asia, Europe, Australia, the Pacific, Latin America, Caribbean Islands, North America, Africa. And no region had more than 5 directors on the board. Until December 8th, 2011, the board was largely volunteer-based, and most of its members were not compensated. The present CEO, blah, 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 blah. There's a list of the current board of directors selected by NORCOM, selected by GNSO. So people are appointed by various organizations to have a seat on ICANN. So that's how that works right now. So, yeah, they want the UN is going to try to claim. But if the UN can come in and say, no, we run the internet now, here's the new regulations, they're just going to try to ignore ICANN and make the new internet. Just like Madman was saying, it'll be 2 internets. You'll have the new IP and then you'll have the old one. And it'll get really weird when you have a device that advertises it connects to both. Because you know that'll be the next thing. So, anyways, that's terrifying. And if the UN actually gets into internet administration, well, that'll be the end of it, pretty much. I mean, it'll be... You'll have to use a darknet because it'll probably be the only shit that works. It's like, why are you on tour? Because everything else is fucking broken? Or you'll end up with regional internets like we talked about, where Russia will run their own, China will run their own, you know, North America and Europe will run one. It'll probably be the original one, but, you know, they'll just set up new networks with the new protocols and it won't really be the internet anymore. It'll be all these different networks, and that, I mean, is arguable whether, you know, how terrible that is, but it'll cause a lot of problems. So, I personally hope China doesn't succeed for all of the reasons, and Yeah. I think we've kicked that horse into the ground. You guys want to move on to this Forbes story?
Batter up. Let's get going on.
All right. The headline here is enough. Exclusive government secretly orders Google to identify anyone who searched a sexual assault victim's name, address, and telephone number. In 2019, the federal investigators in Wisconsin were hunting men they believed had participated in trafficking and sexual abuse of a minor. She had gone missing that year, but had emerged claiming to have been kidnapped and sexually assaulted, according to a search warrant reviewed by Forbes. In an attempt to chase down the perpetrators, investigators turned to Google, asking the tech giant to provide information on anyone who had searched the victim's name, two spellings of her mother's name, and her addresses over 16 days across the year. After being asked to provide all relevant Google accounts and IP addresses of those who made the searches, Google responded with the data in mid-2020, so it took them several months to get all that data, though the court documents do not reveal how many users had their data sent to the government. It's a rare example of a so-called keyword warrant, and the number of search terms included, the broadest on record. Apparently they've got some broader ones now. Before the latest case, only two keyword warrants had been made public. One revealed in 2020 asked for anyone who had searched for the address of an arson victim who is a witness to the government's racketeering case against singer R. Kelly. Okay. Another detailed in 2017 revealed that a Minnesota judge signed off on a warrant asking Google to provide information of anyone who searched a fraud victim's name from within the city of Edina where the crime took place. While Google deals with thousands of such orders every year, the keyword warrant is one of the more contentious. In many cases, the government will have already had a specific Google account they want information on and proof that it's linked to a crime. So a more traditional warrant, just in the digital realm, saying, hey, we think this account's bad. Can you give us this information with a warrant? Normally, the only problem I have with those is that the person with a warrant being served against them has no idea it's happening. So it's fairly easy to abuse, but you know, they're at least going through a process before they just dump data. This one is like, give me anybody who searched for how to make pot brownies in the past 20 hours. Okay, it's a little broad compared to these examples, but it's not that far off. It's like, anybody who searched this name we need to know about. That sounds like a fishing expedition to me. Yeah, it's not dissimilar to so-called geofence warrants, where investigators ask Google to provide information on anyone within the location of a crime scene at a given time. So apparently that's been happening too. It's just, yeah, we need to know everybody whose phones reported them as being in this location at this date. Actually, it's where they got a lot of the January 6th stuff, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's terrifying too. So if you're gonna go to a protest on either side of the political spectrum, might want to leave your phone at home. Just saying. You know, maybe
turn it off before you go there.
Yeah.
Don't even have it on you, madman.
It's like, well, how am I going to live blog the event? Take a camcorder. Take a camcorder, or you know, buy a burner phone with a fake name and cash. That's probably some kind of fraud these days, isn't it? If that's fraud, I'm not recommending it.
Fewer and fewer of them available.
Yeah. Now, if that's fraud, I don't recommend it, so don't do that. But at one point in time, you could do that. Nobody cared. So, quote, as with all law enforcement requests, we have a rigorous process that is designed to protect the privacy of our users while supporting the important work of law enforcement, a Google spokesperson said. The latest case shows Google is continuing to comply with such controversial requests despite concerns over their legality and the potential to implicate innocent people who happen to have just searched for a relevant term. From the government's perspective, in Wisconsin, the scope of the warrant should have been limited enough to avoid the latter. The number of people searching for the specific names, address, and phone number in the given time frame was likely to be low. But privacy experts are concerned about the precedent set by such warrants and the potential for any such order to be a breach of the Fourth Amendment protections from unreasonable searches. There are also concerns about the First Amendment freedom of speech issues, given the potential to cause anxiety amongst Google users that their identities could be handed to the government because of what they searched for. So, you know, then they go on and talk about this quite a bit more. And they have an update at the bottom of the story after publication. Jennifer Lynch, surveillance litigation director at the Electronic Frontier Foundation, highlighted three other Google keyword warrants that were used in the investigation into serial Austin bombings in 2018, which resulted in the death of two people. Not widely discussed at the time, the orders appear even broader than the one above, asking for the IP addresses and Google account information of individuals who searched for various addresses and some terms associated with bomb making, such as low explosives and pipe bomb. Similar orders were served on Microsoft and Yahoo for their respective search engines. As for what data tech companies gave to investigators, the information is under seal. So,
well, what I'm hearing from you is, for all my dubious searches, use DuckDuckGo.
And a VPN or Tor. Or...
I didn't hear DuckDuckGo's name in that.
Well, you know, they're on the list now. They're fairly popular. So, yeah, you want to find some kind of a lesser-known search engine to do for anything that's... I mean, you should probably do that anyways, you know? You should probably not use Google for most of your shit.
You know... There's an old school way of finding out all this shit, and it's called a library.
Are those still around?
Good luck finding one of those that doesn't say use that computer over there. I've been to libraries that don't have card catalogs.
Motherfucker, what?
The card catalog is digital. They don't have a hard card catalog that you can walk over and flip through by hand. To find a book.
You mean I had to learn the Dewey Decimal System in middle school for no fucking reason?
I was fucking good at it, too.
Oh, the shelves are still organized by the Dewey Decimal System, so when you pull up the digital information on the computer, you still use that to find the book on the shelf, but there isn't a paper card to with all the reference information on it.
That's sad.
Yeah, it's one of those things that younger people will eventually not know. Is why is there this little pocket in the back of some books that are old? Well, because that's where they used to put the card from the library that got stamped when you checked it out.
Next, you're going to tell me the computers in the library aren't running amber phosphor screens and connecting to an old Unix backend running the library software anymore too, aren't you?
I won't go that far. I can tell you that if you ever want to get rid of Netflix and don't mind watching things a season behind, you can watch pretty much everything by checking it out at the local library. They also have video games to check out.
So, Madman, I'm pretty sure the statute of limitations on this is up, but I have to ask... At one point, you were archiving Netflix for them. Were you archiving the library as well as a backup, just in case?
I haven't started, but I did get a new library card after I went there and listened to a blues and bluegrass concert on the second floor of the public library.
Oh, that's cool. I remember that library. I bet that worked pretty well.
Yeah, I went up there just to check it out. I was told there's all kinds of cool stuff there, so I figured I'd grab some audiobooks to listen to while I'm working. And I get up there, and I start hearing a harmonica playing. And I know you used to be able to get tapes and records, and you wore a headset and could listen to certain things at the library. And I was wondering if a headphone jack got knocked loose, and I'm just hearing stereo. And I'm like, this is a really good recording. And then I'll walk around a bookshelf. And they'd cleared away a large section and had seats set up for people to sit down, and there was a live band.
Nice!
So I just sat down with the that I was going to check out, listened to the band, got up, bought one of their stickers after it was over so I could possibly remember the name of the band, and then checked out my books and left.
That's cool.
It was one of the last things I did before times.
Ah, I remember.
Yeah. There's going to be a day when almost everything relevant is digital, and you're just going to have trouble finding hard copies or manual ways of doing things. I think the only thing that's going to survive our age is going to be tax returns and religious texts.
Tax returns. Yeah, you're probably right. So, next story.
Next story.
Next story is from Video Game Chronicle, but was all over the fucking place. I don't need to read this one, but apparently there's a 128 gig torrent floating around that contains a good chunk of Twitch's database, some of their internal tools, their entire website source code, some of their analytics, how much certain streamers were making. Twitch was leaked. All of Twitch was leaked. And apparently that's part one, because they scripted out like all the password hashes and stuff like that. And the theory is that, and Twitch confirmed this is real. Twitch was like, yeah, that's our data. So they confirmed it. And good on them for coming out immediately and saying, yeah, that's ours. Now they're saying that they haven't seen login details in the leak yet, but since the leak was named part one, the assumption is that part two is going to be sold somewhere, and that's got the login hashes and shit like that. So, yeah, if you have a Twitch password, you might want to change it and maybe set up like two-factor auth or something, just as a thought. And, you know, if you're one of those people who was trying to be anonymous on Twitch, hopefully your info is not in that database. I haven't pulled it down and looked at it, so I don't know. But there were some people on Twitter posting the amount of money people had been paid. And good God, some people have made some money on Twitch.
And they put the work in. I'll give them that.
Yeah. No, some of them do. I mean, I'm not disparaging
the titty streamers,
them. I'm not disparaging
even the titty
them.
Streamers because they still have to spend the time there.
No, no, no. I'm not disparaging them for making the money.
I know
you're
not.
That's awesome. I'm amazed at the amounts. It's like, damn, that was Critical Role has made almost $10 million in 2 years. Now I don't know how much of that gets split out and paid and production money and shit like that, but it's like, holy shit, that's a lot of money. For a couple of years of streaming.
It'd be a shame if the IRS was to find out about it.
Well, there's that. That's probably the bigger problem for a lot of these streamers. So,
are you saying people aren't porting all of their income, are you?
People no, man, I am not.
Well, honest.
You go watch some
just
of these
remember
streams.
Remember the Great Thought Audit.
Yeah, the Great Thought Audit. You go watch clips from some of these streams and you see people paying 5,000 bits to play a sound clip while somebody's playing a video game. And it's like, 5,000 bits? It's like, what is that? That's like $50. What the fuck?
Yeah.
So, it's like, holy shit. I would say we need to get into streaming, but I don't have the tits for it, so. That joke is never going to get old, at least not for me.
Depends on which audience you're going for. Gay dudes may play video games. You might be a bear to someone.
But I don't want to be a bear to someone. Madman.
Oh yeah, like chicks want dudes ogling them all the time.
Fair point.
You got to work through the downsides and all that sweet sweet bathtub money.
God.
I'm going to be honest with you. I'm glad this is dead to me now. I can have any blow-up doll I want.
So I've got another article here from Engadget. Twitch says a server configuration change led to the massive data leak, as no indication that login credentials were exposed. So Twitch has released an update on the massive hack that appears to expose source code, streamer payment figures, and other information. Said data was exposed to the internet due to an error in a Twitch server configuration change that was subsequently accessed by a malicious third party. It added that its teams are working with urgency to investigate the attack. The Amazon-owned streaming site added that it has no indication that any login credentials, including passwords, were exposed. Additionally, full credit card numbers are not stored by Twitch, so full credit card numbers were not exposed, the company said. Twitch also said that out of an abundance of caution, we have reset all stream keys and provided a link to get a new one. Depending on the broadcast software you use, you may need to manually update your software to start a new stream. Twitch Studio, Streamlabs, Xbox, PlayStation, Twitch mobile app users should not need to take any action for your new key to work. OBS users who connect to their Twitch account should also not need to take any action. However, if you haven't connected your OBS account to Twitch, you'll need to manually copy your stream key from the Twitch dashboard and paste it into OBS. Since I've never set up a Twitch stream, I've only ever manually put stream keys into OBS, mostly for my own servers now that I think about it. I bet life would be a lot easier if I actually used other people's servers for shit, wouldn't it?
It becomes a lot more stressful.
Say what? So, RU said it's...
RU said
it'd be a lot less stressful. I heard that.
No, I said it'd be a lot more stressful.
Oh.
Be worried about every word you said, every action you did. Is this the end of my channel? Who can I have on with me? Are they going to say something that's going to end my channel? You know what I mean? Did I listen to some of these podcasts that are still on mainstream internet providers? They are fucking walking on eggshells, man.
Well, they have to be because they don't know what the rules are.
Yeah.
And some of them will have a 2 or 3 minute section where it's just a screenshot of you can get the full podcast here and here where they won't censor me, but YouTube won't let me say what I'm saying now.
Please come over to this other platform and give us money. Yeah. So.
It's not always give us money. Some of them are other free platforms. It's just not YouTube.
Yeah. It's like, we're on YouTube to get an audience, and we're trying to get you to go over here where we can actually have some fun. Yeah. Yeah, yesterday, attackers said they stole the entirety of Twitch TV, including the site's mobile, desktop, and console. Twitch clients also access proprietary SDKs and internal AWS services, red teaming tools, and more. I bet Twitch has got a fun red team, you know? I bet that's a fun job, trying to hack into other people's streams and stuff all day long. Messing with the back-end stuff, seeing what you can get away with. All of that information could make Twitch vulnerable to future attacks by letting potential hackers probe for weaknesses. The leak also showed creator payments in the millions for streamers like XQC, Nick Merckx, and Shroud. Several have confirmed the figures are accurate. Twitch said that the investigation is ongoing. Quote, we are still in the process of understanding the impact in detail, unquote, the company wrote. Now, that said, it has really only been a few days since this came out, and good on Twitch for acknowledging that it's real. Granted, I don't know how they couldn't, because it's so public, and you've got their own stream, you know, people on the streamers out there saying, yeah, those numbers look about right. So, you know, you'd have a hard time denying it, but a lot of companies would, or just not say anything for a week or shit like that, or longer. So I give them credit for coming out and admitting what's going on and trying to figure and being transparent with people. Which is what you want to see more of these tech companies do when a security breach happens. So, you know, I don't fault them for that. So, you know, it sounds like they're trying to do the right thing here. It's just a mess. Nobody else cared about that one?
No, I think you said enough.
All right,
there's just not a lot to say on it.
Yeah.
They disclosed, which is all you can really have them do.
Yeah. Moving on then. Next one is from Tom's Hardware. AMD, Windows 11 slows our CPUs up to 15%, patches incoming. So apparently Windows 11 has got some incompatibilities with the Zen CPU architecture. And it's apparently all of them. You know, they're saying the 2000 through 5000 processors. And the only reason they're not checking the first gen Ryzen is because Microsoft has said they're not going to support the first gen Ryzen on Windows 11. But apparently, yeah, something is let's see, first, AMD's advisory said the issue boils down into two categories. First, the measured and functional L3 latency can increase by 3 times, meaning you can see impact with measurement utilities, and that results in real performance degradation in games and applications. The bug impacts applications that are sensitive to memory subsystem latency, causing a 3 to 5% reduction in performance. The excuse me, the issue also causes 10 to 15% performance reduction outliers in games, quote, commonly used for esports, unquote, which isn't surprising given that games that tend to be extremely sensitive to memory and cache latency. Additionally, AMD's preferred core feature, which directs single-threaded applications to the fastest two cores on the chip, might also not work as expected. This would primarily impact the performance in lightly threaded applications. AMD said the performance reduction may be more noticeable in chips with eight or more cores and a 65-watt or higher TDP rating. So, you know, the good AMD chips are going to get it worse. AMD says it expects a Windows update to resolve the L3 cache issue, while a software update will remediate the problem with the UEFI CPP2 C2 preferred core technology. Both are expected to arrive this month. So they're working on it, but yeah, if you've bumped your system to Windows 11 and you've got an AMD chip and you thought it was running slower, you're not wrong. They got the drivers wrong. And I mean, granted, this kind of shit happens all the time with new operating systems, right? So even if you want to upgrade to Windows 11, you should probably wait like 6 months, a year. So.
So do you think Intel just paid them more money than AMD did, or was this an honest fuck up?
Well, you know.
I'd say it was an error.
I don't know, Madman. I don't know that Intel is directly paying them, but Microsoft does have a hardware partner program. And I don't know that I don't know if AMD are first class citizens in that or not. I would imagine they are, but for the longest time, AMD chips were not competitive. So I wouldn't put it past Microsoft to have been developing solely on Intel platforms for a long time. So I don't know. It does seem like that AMD probably does not have a lot of penetration into Microsoft's developer laptops, which makes sense since if they're not all using Surfaces, they're all probably just using commodity machines, and a lot of your commodity Dells and your commodity HPs and stuff like that are, most of the business line stuff still uses Intel chips, so. You know, not that Ryzen isn't good for those kind of applications. It's just they haven't had the market penetration even with the current line of chips. And I think a lot of people look at it as a gaming chip anyways. So I know that hurts their penetration to the business market. Even though their mobile APUs are some of the best out there right now as far as efficiency and power. I mean, hell, the Steam Deck is going to be running an AMD APU. But again, that promotes the idea that they're for gaming. So... I could see just the majority of Microsoft's devs just not running any, just running Intel systems and not even thinking about it, you know? So, last article I have for tonight is from AP News. And that's, U.S. posed to if you can't tell, I drank most of the bourbon already. U.S. posed to sue contractors who don't report breaches. So they want to know about your pants. Breaches, pants, okay.
This is an old story, isn't it?
Is it? I thought this was... I mean, this was posted today.
But I thought we...
Have we talked about this?
Maybe we didn't.
Or maybe it's the same.
Everything is new again. Go with it, yeah.
I mean, we're at an hour. We could skip it. I've got three things for Dojo if you want. Basically, U.S. Justice...
I'm pretty sure.
Justice Department says they want to sue any contractors who don't report security breaches to the Justice Department. Kind of sounds like they're within their rights, especially if it's in their contracts, which it probably is. So...
Maybe they just threaten them if they don't disclose. They have to do it in a timely manner. I think that was the last time we heard about this, but this might be...
All right, well, I'll leave the link in the notes. We'll skip reading the article. If anybody's curious, we'll leave it out there. Let's do this. Got three things for you tonight in Dojo. The first is a YouTube video that Valve put out. I'm totally fanboying for the Steam Deck, obviously. They put out a video actually showing, and it's pretty comical, showing how to take apart a Steam Deck and get to the thumbsticks and the SSD if you wanted to try to swap them out on your own. The entire video is taken from the point of don't do this. You shouldn't do this. Don't open up your Steam Deck. But if you're going to open up your Steam Deck, here's how to do it.
Yeah.
And then they said at least they're going to be providing a store with some replacement parts, including things like thumbsticks, right? So if the Steam Deck does start to develop like a Joy-Con drift like the Switch does, then cool, you can actually open it up and swap it out. But they also say in there that opening it immediately reduces its impact resistance. And they've got some shots in there where I guess they were testing one, because they show somebody dropping it a couple of different ways and then dropping like a big piece of metal on it. So that's kind of cool. But yeah, they do show in kind of a disjointed way, not, you know, of how to open up the Steam Deck while the entire time saying, don't do this. This is terrible. You shouldn't do this, but it is really fucking cool. And then they show where the SSD is in it, because that's been one of the big contention points with the Steam Deck, is could you buy the cheapest one and then swap out the SSD for a better one? And they show where the SSD is and talk about how it's basically right on top of the Wi-Fi chip. So if you are going to swap the SSD, you need to make sure it's rated for the same ESD and interference as the one that's in it. And that makes sense. It's also a 2230 SSD, so it's very small. You can buy fairly good sized ones, but I don't know. That doesn't mean they'll actually fit in the silly thing, because it's you know, it's got chips and stuff under it. So when and that does mean they show the inside of the thing from the back, and they show it with the can off, so you can see the heat spreader, you can see some of the chips. It is a pre-production unit, so you know, there's no guarantee that that's what a retail one's going to look like, but it is kind of cool that it is modular, and they say they're going to put up a parts store eventually, so, you know, at least moderate support for right to repair. That's pretty cool. All right.
Oh, there'll be a modding community to develop around this.
Oh, I'm sure. There's going to be designs to with extension cables and replacing the back panel to you know, get bigger drives in it and do other shit to it. You know that. It's like, we're going to 3D print a back panel to get some more room, and then we're going to put an extension cord in it, and then we're going to be able to stick, you know, a 2 terabyte SSD in the back of it, and 100 other things, and, you know, hard drives that'll clip on the back and hook into the USB-C port, and God knows what else, right? There's going to be
my Steam Deck's now a 3D printer as well. Watch my 2-hour video.
How does it fit in your backpack? It doesn't. So you've just... So what does that mean you've really done? Installed OctoPrint on it. Good God, why? But, yeah, if you're at that point, just, you know, just get some parts, get an Intel NUC, and make your own. Well, a NUC's not going to have the GPU. I don't know. It actually, you know, the Steam Deck, when it's been out for a little while, and you know, the low-end ones with the smaller hard disk might be a good source of parts for building custom rigs and shit like that. I'm sure that'll be a DIY video set, is taking your Steam Deck and turning it into a desktop after, you know, you've ruined the battery or cracked the screen or something. That'll be a feature a few years from now. It's people saying, here's how to turn it into a desktop or, you know, some other thing. Or how to duct tape it to the back of your VR headset so it hangs off the back of your head as a counterweight and, you know, runs as a VR headset. I don't know. I mean, God knows what people are going to come up with, right? So, next thing I have for you tonight in Digital Dojo is a website called 12ft.io. Now, what this website is it says, show me a 10-foot paywall, and I'll show you a 12-foot ladder. Okay. So, by using JavaScript filtering and the Google cache, this will take any news website that has a paywall on its articles, like Economist, New York Times, shit like that, you punch it in through this, or just use it in the URL of 12ft.io/ and then whatever URL, and it'll get around the paywall. So, you know, if you've read too many of your Wall Street Journal articles without paying, and it's now saying you need a subscription, and you haven't figured out to clear your browser's cache or go into private mode for that, this thing will let you get around it. So that's kind of neat. I've only played with it a little bit, so I'm not exactly sure what kind of calls it's mangling, what kind of filtering it's doing. And since it's pulling things from the Google cache, it might not be all that private. You know, if you're worried about your URL being logged accessing things through it. Of course, anybody running a server like that could do that. This one seems genuinely, you know, honest about just trying to get you around the paywalls. But just be aware that, you know, it might not be the most private thing out there. If you're just wanting to read some articles that are behind a paywall, this might be a useful tool for doing it. Okay. And the last thing I have for you tonight in Dojo is a website called TOSDR.org. And that's Terms of Service Didn't Read. Because nobody reads that shit because it's 12 pages long. And what it does is it breaks down the terms of services for various websites into bullet points that you can understand. So I'm just going to scroll down here and pick one. Here's Reddit. Quote, so here's what the terms of service say. The service can read your private messages. And if you have your mouse over there, it'll give you some more explanation. The service can delete specific content without prior notice or reason. You signed away moral rights. You irrevocably waive any claims or assertions of moral rights or attribution with respect to your content. So, yeah, you're signing away your moral rights if anything you post to Reddit, right? The service can share your information with third parties. The service may keep any data, personal data. And, of course, they've got all points. You know, you can go see more. Then you look at DuckDuckGo, and they've got them graded, actually. So DuckDuckGo
is all color-coded, man. Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah, DuckDuckGo is a grade of A. Service does not track you. You do not need to register. The cookies used by this service do not contain information. The IP address of visitors are not tracked. So, yeah, actually, what we were talking about earlier about the warrants, if DuckDuckGo isn't keeping the logs, it doesn't matter. So.
Oh, okay, so the two services I use are A-grade, because I use Startpage as well.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, Startpage is good, too.
Yeah, Startpage is not your best for a search engine, but it is. It's a great thing if you're just looking for a very low-level VPN.
Oh, here's one for you. Pornhub, grade E. The service can read your private messages. The service can delete specific content without reason and may do so without notice. You sign away your moral rights. The service holds on to any content that you've deleted. Terms may be changed at any time without notice to the user. Oh, for fuck's sake. I mean, that's if you want a service, CNN, you sign away your moral rights. I mean, for fuck's sake. Apple, content you post may be edited by the service for any reason. That's actually scarier than just deleting it. It's like, no, we can make you say whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm just chuffed now that the two I use got the A-grade service because I don't use anything else.
There you go. Yeah, of course, they got Facebook at the top here. Facebook stores your data whether you have an account or not. Your identity is used in ads that are shown to others. The service can read your private messages. The service can view your browser history. Deleted content is not deleted. For fuck's sake. Madman, pick a service. Let's Google it and see if they have it in here. Or Google. Oh, it's got a search in it. I'm doing it. Fuck. I'm using Google
HBO
like Kleenex.
Max.
HBO Max. Let's see. We'll search. HBO Max has no grade yet. They haven't done that one yet. They've got it in there, but they know it hasn't. They haven't done that one yet.
All right. Was it X Hamster? Is that that weird porn site?
X-Hamster. No grade.
I think it is.
Oh, no. Okay. VPN Hamster is on there with a grade C. Oh, they've got VPN services on here. That could be useful for figuring out a good VPN. X Hamster has no grade. Okay, let's
That's
see.
That's a shame.
Private internet access.
NordVPN.
Private internet, no grade yet. NordVPN. NordVPN grade C. Logs are kept for an undefined period of time. Terms may be changed at discretion without notice. You agree to defend, indemnify, hold the service harmless in case of a claim related to your use of the service. The service ignores the do not track header. The service may use your personal information for marketing purposes. Okay, NordVPN, probably not a great source.
Yeah, that's... Go fuck yourself, NordVPN.
What's another VPN that you see advertised a lot? I've seen private internet access. I've seen Nord. I'm trying to think of another. I've seen others. But they're not.
Yeah, I blank him.
They all have VPN in the name. Let's just search VPN and see what we got. Here we go. Orchid VPN. The service can delete comments without reason and does so without notice. Hide Me VPN. No grade, but a lot of things they don't like. Let's see. There's a bunch of VPNs I've never heard of on here that look sketchy.
What about Express VPN?
Express. That's a good one. Let's see. Express VPN. Grade B. Privacy policy may be changed at any time. Tracking via third-party cookies for advertising the service can block or censor user communications. You agree to defend, indemnify, and hold the service harmless for any claim of service. Service may use device fingerprinting. So they don't have any of the really bad stuff, but they do have some questionable stuff. So, I mean, but just by this, by comparing their terms of service, ExpressVPN ranks better than Nord. So that's interesting. Steam. Let's see what Steam's on here. I bet that's one we all use. Grade D. The service can read your private messages. May collect and use location data. Service may keep personal data. Service assumes no liability for damages, losses, or any other matter. Service reserves the right to disclose your personal information without notifying you. That's not great. Steam China. Prohibits political discussions which are events against government-advocated value. Private messages can be read. So, okay, yeah, don't use Steam in China. Anyways, all right, that's pretty good. That's a good service. That TOSDR.org. Spend some time with that, especially with the stuff you use. It's eye-opening.
Good find.
And, of course, listen to the stream. We're always working on it. That's a lie. We haven't worked on the stream in a year.
Shut up.
Listen to the stream. We're always working on it. Peer Decking every Thursday. Galaxy 15 radio site and subreddit in the IRC tonight. Psychros, Jay Ludwig, myself, and Madman. We did move the IRC over to Libre chat because Freenode shit the bed. But Madman, closing thoughts.
I think Kugelschummer Shandy is good, and it's almost gone for the year.
Oh, yeah, I need to go stock up on some beer collections this weekend, I think, and get a haircut.
On the bright side, it is time for Oktoberfest.
Yep, that it is. Are you closing thoughts?
A TV show worth watching? Squid Games. Yeah, get some weeb into you this weekend. Watch some South Korean TV.
I've heard you talking about that a lot, but I don't know what it is. So
I did. So last week, I see this headline. South Korean government sued Netflix for almost shutting down the internet. Apparently, this show was so fucking popular, it ground the fucking internet to a halt in South Korea for a day. There were so many people watching it. So I'm like, I've got to go watch. I got to see what this is all about. And, I hit up an episode and I'm like, okay, this has some potential. And throw it over to my wife. She's powered through it already. She's finished. I got a couple to go, but it's essentially Takashi's Castle. Any of you ever see that back in the day? That Japanese
game show? I've seen
the
re-edited American versions.
Okay, it's essentially that, but... and then add the cube. So You know, people play children's games and try to live.
Oh, God.
Okay. Look, there was one episode last night, man, where I just would have said, shoot me now. I don't want to play. I'd rather fucking die than have the chance of playing this one. I'm out. Not gone. And you'll know which episode I'm talking about when you watch it, because I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people out there that would just go, hell no. Not a chance.
Wow.
Just think of the Chinese sky bridge that was made of glass, but every fifth panel was made by a defective glass maker.
I mean, it could be safe. I mean, even low skilled guys are right every once in a while, right? I mean, okay.
Yeah. All right. Fuck that. Yeah. So we went out this weekend and watched the whole lot, I suppose, on whichever streaming provider you can afford best.
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
Downsco nose down and call it a night.
He's going to rape you repeatedly.
Shut up, Wesley.